Welcome back, everyone, to Aspire to Lead, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper.
All right, Aspire Leaders and Teach Better Family, thank you so much for joining once again this week. I have a phenomenal, and I say that with emphasis, phenomenal guest that has been on the Aspire to Lead podcast before. However, she had to share the stage with some crazy guy named George Kuros, and we had to get rid of him. Just Katie back.
More Katie, less George. That's what you're getting.
That's what you're getting. The full package here. So Dr. Katie Novak, thank you so much for being on Aspire to Lead for a second time.
Thank you. I'm super happy to be here.
Oh, I loved our conversation last time, and I'm super excited to talk about universal design a little bit more. And you are doing some phenomenal things in education. I swear, I see on social media all the time just what you and your team are doing. So excited to share with the audience too about some of the projects that you've got going on. But before we dive into these important topics, I'd love to have you share out once again about your educational and leadership journey.
Okay, I would love to. The quick and dirty answer here is that I was a classroom teacher for 12 years. I taught middle school and high school English, and that is where I saw myself forever. I loved teaching kids. I wanted to be in the classroom, and I had this really amazing opportunity as a teacher to be trained in Universal Design for Learning by CAST. They're the UDL mothership, essentially. They coined the framework in the 1990s, and I was trained by the founders of CAST in Universal Design for Learning. And it totally rocked my world as a classroom teacher, just the way to approach planning, the way to co-create a learning environment with kids. I was so hooked. And as a component of the professional development, the powers that be at CAST came out to observe my seventh grade classroom. And they were like, you're doing really cool things with students. Would you come and share this maybe at a UDL symposium? And I was like, ooh, I mean, sure, I guess so. I mean, I can talk about what I'm doing. It's not the way, but it's a way, and I've found success. So the first time I presented in front of adults, it was at the Harvard University International UDL Symposium. And I come in and talk about what I'm doing in seventh grade, and people were coming up to me saying, do you have a business card? I'm like, for what? Like, what? I don't need a business card, right? And they're like, do you come to other districts? I'm like, when? I work full time. So the reason that I went into leadership was because I had so many really cool opportunities to work with districts all around the world on UDL, but I didn't have the time to do it. And so I realized that if I went into leadership and had an administrator contract, it gave me more flexibility to be able to work and share this knowledge. And so I was a reading coordinator, a Title I director, and then I was an assistant superintendent of schools for 6 years, which allowed me truly the best of both worlds, to be able to lean into the leadership work, to support educators who are the most important resource we have in our schools, and to be able to do that outside the district. And then the balance got shifted a little bit too much and I had to make a choice. But I am so glad that I spent nearly 20 years in public education and continue to collaborate with people all over the world who are continuing to do this work. But nothing quite will be the same as having my own seventh grade English classroom and loving on those scholars, because there's something really magical that happens in classrooms.
Oh, middle school is my favorite. I mean, that's where I spent my world, and seventh graders are... It's yes. Never a dull day in that classroom, that's for sure.
I have seventh graders now as kids, so it's like I'm living in magic.
Yeah, it's actually, as a parent, it's great practice with that age group specifically. But I want to go back to universal design, because you said UDL is something that you were educated on, you brought to the classroom, found a lot of success in that. And I think universal design is a term that's used more often now. However, I'm guessing that folks may not know what that definition is and what it looks like in the classroom. So if you wouldn't mind, Katie, just kind of, again, use that as our baseline of our conversation. You know, what is universal design for learning?
Okay. So I love that question. And we're going to do it real simple here. First, yeah. We want to design learning universally. That means we want to design learning so everyone can learn. And if we want to design learning so that everyone can learn, we have to realize that we have a lot of different needs, a lot of different strengths, a lot of different challenges, and we're incredibly unique and always changing. And so the idea is that one size fits all is simply not going to allow everyone to learn. So I'm going to give you an analogy to start talking about this, and then we can dive into what it looks like in the classroom. I want you to imagine that we're going to have a super amazing post-podcast cocktail party. And the goal is that everyone is going to have like an amazing drink they enjoy. And my signature drink is a chocolate peanut butter mudslide. And it's amazing. And I could milk the cows myself, for goodness sake, and put so much time and effort into this. But the spoiler alert is, we know that that's a really inaccessible drink. That is like the mother of exclusionary drinks because it has lactose, it has nuts, it has gluten, it has alcohol. And if my goal is I want everyone to have a drink, I simply cannot only serve this chocolate peanut butter mudslide. It doesn't matter how much effort I put into it. It doesn't matter how much people love me and tell me that I am the greatest cocktail connoisseur of our generation. There's something exclusionary about the design of that cocktail. And so I think a lot of the times as educators, we're spending so much time trying to create something and it's so thoughtful and it's so creative and we're putting in so much effort. We're milking the proverbial cows and then we create this lesson and we have so many kids who are not making progress, who are not engaged, who are not learning at high levels. And teachers are working way too hard for that. So the idea of universal design is what really is the goal? Everyone has a drink. If I didn't provide flexibility, what would be the barriers? And I say, well, I know a lot of people are not drinkers. There's a lot of people who are lactose intolerant. There's a lot of people who are gluten sensitive. So instead, if I want to design a cocktail party for everyone, how about I'll make my mudslides because they're awesome. And then I'm going to have some water, maybe some beer, some coffee, and then it will be BYOB. And in that, I have designed something that would work for everyone. And that's really what Universal Design for Learning is all about, which is what is the goal? What are the potential barriers to reaching the goal? And how do you provide flexible options so that every single person can get what they need to meet that goal? And so a lot of people think of it as designing a lesson for every individual student, as opposed to just knowing that variability and barriers are predictable and that simply by having options to say, this is what the goal is. I thought about some potential barriers. I want you to have a BYOB option in case I didn't recognize a barrier. And let's really think about what are the options? How do we put this together so that all of us can move in the right direction? So I think sometimes we think of it as just being like choice. So I'm going to talk to you about why choice is not the lens. Because let's say that one of our besties comes who both has a nut allergy and doesn't drink alcohol. And I'm like, here's my chocolate peanut butter mudslide signature. And the person says, oh, I'm so sorry, Katie, I'm not a drinker and I have a nut allergy. And I say, oh, that's no problem at all. Do you want it in a blue cup or a red cup? I'm sorry. I want to make sure you have more choices. Do you like a metal straw or do you like a bamboo straw? Obvious answer is the metal straw. Do you want shaved chocolate or do you want some drizzled chocolate? I could give you a million options and choices, but if I don't eliminate the barrier, you're excluded. And that's really the meat of that framework. Firm goals, flexible means based on variability, and we allow learners to be more self-aware, to make choices for themselves, and then we navigate and coach and provide feedback until everybody is moving in the direction they need to move.
Okay, so I want to talk about it as a leadership lens, because obviously you were a classroom teacher, but then you've moved up in the ranks. And mm-hmm. I'm guessing that your passion and seeing success within the classroom using this strategy had allowed you the opportunity to get folks on board to implement mm-hmm. this in their classroom also. So taking that higher viewpoint, if you will, to try to get this implemented maybe campus-wide or district-wide, you know, what were some of the challenges that you saw in trying to get this as a universal practice for UDL or Universal Design of Learning?
I think the biggest selling point, and if we're talking to leaders here, aspiring leaders, people need to experience it. So let's talk about a one-size-fits-all faculty meeting. We all come in, we all sit down in like the same kind of clump area.
Yeah.
Are given a death by PowerPoint. We maybe have a hard copy of an article that we all must read and we all must highlight, and then we must have a discussion. And my first question is, what is actually the goal here? Is the goal that we maybe learn more about Universal Design for Learning? Because if that's the case, when everybody comes in, I'm going to say, let's just take 5 minutes to frame our goal for today. I want to give you time to think about what you already know about Universal Design for Learning. And then there's going to be some options for you to explore and to learn more, and then share what you've learned and what questions you still have so I can plan the next meeting. So feel free to stand, feel free to have a seat. We'll spend about 5 minutes here, and then you're going to decide how this meeting is going to work best for you. And so maybe I share what I just shared about the analogy. And then I say, now I want you to have an opportunity to learn more about what it means. So you can either read this article. I have some hard copies here if you want to annotate it, if you want to go outside, sit under a tree. I also have it digitally, which will allow you to enlarge it, to translate it, to annotate it. I've maybe recorded my voice so that you can go for a walk and listen to it. We've been in class all day. I have a couple of videos that you might watch. I have some bags of popcorn over here and a microwave if you want to grab that and then head to your classroom. But ultimately, I want you to learn more about what Universal Design for Learning is. So I want you to think about, what do you need right now? Do you need to just get out of here and go for a walk? Do you want to watch a video with your colleagues? There's a couple of videos to choose from. And then we'll all gather back here for the last 15 minutes. And you're going to answer, what have you learned about UDL? And you can choose to do that in a conversation. You can choose to do that in a notebook and give it to me in an exit ticket. Or you can choose to put your ideas in a survey and let me know what you need next. And I am always available to you if you need anything. So as professionals, as adults, take a moment, come up with your strategy, and then we'll check back in here and just see how it's going for you. And when you do that and ask feedback, people have said to me, I'm allowed to leave the room. I'm like, what are you talking about? Are you allowed to leave? School is over and you're like a very professional. Yes, you can go outside. But I think that so often, even as leaders, we say, we want you to be more flexible. We want you to share your goals. And then we ourselves go back to this one size fits all. And I think one of the most powerful things that we can do is to start off every meeting saying, this is really what the goal is. And these are all the ways that you could learn. And these are all the ways that you could share your learning. And am I missing anything here? Is there another way you want to do this? And, you know, tens of thousands of pieces of feedback that I get from educators, it's 97% positive of saying, I actually learned something here for my own practice. And when you work with tens of thousands of people, having a 97% agreement rating with this, you know, really improved my development as an educator is exceptional, but it's not because of what I'm doing. It's what I'm allowing people to do because I believe in their autonomy. I believe in their own understanding of themselves, and I want to be there to support them.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcast. Now let's get back to the episode.
All right. I think this is a perfect bridge for building autonomy, right? So going from staff to now back to students, you know, and shifting that, you had talked about, and I love this analogy of your cocktail party and having folks bring their own drinks, right? So, you know, if students are bringing their own drinks, what does that look like in the classroom? And how can our, you know, teachers shift of having kind of that traditional model to now a student-led environment for building autonomy?
So, yeah, so Kat Tucker and I, we've written 3 books together all about this concept of shifting to the learner. So if you're an aspiring leader, we want to co-create with our educators. If you're in the classroom, we want to co-create with our students. And yep. This bring your own learning option is a lot of the times as teachers, we're thinking that we have to be the ones to curate all this content. So we have to find 5 texts that we feel like are worthy enough for students to read so that they can have this experience, as opposed to, I'm going to choose one really culturally responsive text. We're going to closely read it. And then students are going to make their own text sets to compare and contrast it with a piece of nonfiction, a video or a podcast, something on social media. And so I want to really focus on how do I help students to understand, how do you find a high quality video that is accurate? How do you look at it through the lens of the author's kind of purpose or the producer's purpose? And a lot of the times it's us trying to say, here are all the resources that you can choose from, as opposed to here's a really high quality resource. And I want you to understand and make connections between and among this resource that we're all going to share. And I can make it really accessible because you can read it, you can listen to it, we can activate background knowledge. But I want you to find something that is authentic, that is relevant, that is meaningful, that pairs it. And so here is a checklist of questions that you can ask to determine, is this rigorous? Is this high quality? And I'm going to model with you what that might look like. And now take out your devices, work alone or together. You can use this scaffold if it's helpful. And I'm going to go around and check in with you. If you're feeling really overwhelmed, you have the option to start over here with me. I'll help you get your first one and we'll do it together. But ultimately, you as a learner can find your own learning resources. And I think a lot of times we're taking our nights that should be spent watching Schitt's Creek and, you know, having some relaxation time and eating dinner. And instead we're going online trying to find all of these different resources when in fact, students are capable of their own learning. Even thinking about preschoolers, we're going to be learning about setting and we might have a shared story, but let's go and talk to our friend, the librarian. And I want you to find a book that you have just, it just speaks to your heart. It brings you to your come from place. And then we're going to compare the setting of what we're doing to the setting outside and where we have recess and the setting of the book that you chose, as opposed to us making decisions for students and learners that they're fully capable of making themselves in really responsible ways if we give them the strategies and feedback for how to do that.
Katie, I didn't think I could like you anymore, but the Schitt's Creek reference is huge.
I mean, we're best friends now.
Well, I want to go back to your book because this is exciting. You have a brand new book, like you said, with Caitlin Tucker. And so will you just share a little bit about that resource? And, you know, I know you touched on it a little bit, but Shift Writing into the Classroom with UDL and Blended Learning is the title. And I would love for folks to check this resource out. So, you know, why did you write it and what can help them with specifically these topics of UDL and blended learning?
Okay, so one of the things that has rocked the education world is the robots are getting like really smart. You know, your ChatGPT, yes. Artificial intelligence. And what we have seen is some really significant steps backwards in terms of using innovative, disruptive technology because there's a fear of the technology. And so in COVID, people were making a lot of leaps and strides of using voice to text and using things like Grammarly and doing a lot of peer review. And a lot of people are thinking that it's such a big distraction that we have to eliminate it as an option. So there's a lot more blogs I'm reading about all students have to handwrite. And the thing is that's incredibly ableist and it's incredibly exclusionary because there are many learners, if we're going to be inclusive, that don't have the fine motor skills, might be struggling with dysgraphia. Goodness gracious, you could just break your wrist, right? We cannot go back to one size fits all ways to produce writing because it's allowing kind of the war of the robots. Like we're going to lose if we just put our heads down, right? Instead, it's like, how do we leverage these technologies as a way to be really efficient? So we wrote this book talking about the importance of doing more work in the classroom or doing more work in faculty meetings with educators to say, this is an incredible tool for efficiency. And we want to talk to you about all the really great ways that you can do it without the robots negotiating what you know to be best for kids, what you know is your voice, what you know is your understanding of content. Because I think there is the potential of just kind of laying down and saying, okay, plan the lesson for me or write the essay for me. And we're going to lose that human element of that I know these kids and I want to be able to do what I do best, which is really deep connections, understanding barriers, you know, helping to provide feedback, pulling small groups based on formative assessment data. But in order to do that, I really need to do a lot of the cognitive human work first of like, what really is it that all students have to know and do? And what does success look like at grade level? And what is the success criteria? And what are the non-negotiables? And then we can go to these tools and say, are there more ways to do this? But I think that in classrooms, we often just eliminate those flexible options. And we say to students, now you have to write it by hand. And what Kat and I say is essentially both of us are professional writers. We've written multiple books. I've written multiple articles. You have no idea the tools that I use to write. You don't know what my pre-writing process looks like, whether it's having a conversation with colleagues, whether it's doing research, whether it's a brainstorm, whether it's a free write. You don't know my planning process. It could be a graphic organizer. It could be an outline. It could be a free write. It could be a storyboard. You don't know how I draft, by hand, by voice, by typing. You don't know how often I get a peer review, how often I ask for feedback, how often I use Grammarly. And I am still able to produce something that I feel like is wholly mine. It is my voice. If you heard me talk, if you saw something that I wrote, you'd say, okay, it's trends, right? The problem is that we often eliminate those same options for students. We say, you have to fill out a graphic organizer. You have to draft by hand. You have to do it this way. And then some students are left to think that they don't have the ability to write something brilliant and unique. And if we can get students to realize their voice, the power of their voice, by giving them these options to say, these are all the different ways that people can go through pre-writing. And we're going to try each of those. We're going to do a little Goldilocks, right? We're all going to try out what it looks like to brainstorm, to research, to do this. We're going to talk about how do you create an outline? How do you create a graphic organizer? How do you do that? And then I really want you to think about like what actually works for you. And if I sit with a kid and they go through the process of explaining what they're trying to say, they show me how they want to organize it. We have conversations, they share with their peers. That's fine if they then use any of these tools, because I can say, I don't think that's how you wanted to say it. I feel like you're losing yourself here. And when we are trying to have these transferable skills to be great communicators, to be critical thinkers, to be problem solvers, that for them in the future will require the use of all of these tools. And so we have to teach them how to use them responsibly. And that means that we have to spend more time with the relationship, with the conversations. And so the book is really trying to give lots of flexible options and choices to allow students to really develop their understanding of a topic, what they're trying to say, how they want to say it, and then leveraging these tools to do that in a way that is more efficient, but that everybody reads it and says, yep, that's Katie's writing.
All right, I want to dig a little deeper on this topic of technology, because I'm 100% shaking my head. I saw with my own staff, right? We, you know, during COVID, dove into all of these different tools and really relied on technology. And then as soon as everyone got back on the campus, it was like, oh, let's go back to normal, right? In quotations, what was normal? Well, really it's traditional practices, especially when you talk about writing. And so I think fear was kind of this black cloud over everyone of, you know, if we have all this technology in the classroom, it's going to be a distraction. Mm-hmm. I know that you talk about this often. So, you know, for our leaders and for maybe just educators in general that are listening right now, how can teachers balance that use of technology as a valuable tool, but at the same time, minimizing the potential distraction?
I mean, I think a lot of it is conversations, and I don't think that this is only for students. I work predominantly with adults. Yep. I teach them graduate courses. I do a lot of professional learning with adults, and phones are a distraction for all humans. It's not students. I am like uniquely guilty of, oh, I just got a notification on email. I'll just check it real quick. Oh, there's a Facebook ad there. That's that. Oh, I wanted that. And then suddenly you're like, oh, what happened, right? And so I think a lot of it is just, first of all, having conversations at the beginning to say, you know, what do you need to do to really focus here? And it might mean to turn off your notifications, which if you're a superintendent of schools, you're not turning off your notifications, right? Like that is just the reality of a position, is that you have to be available. So I'm like, think about your position. And then I want you to share with someone. You don't have to share it with me. You could share it via text. You could write it down. What would you have to do to be totally responsible in your job and as focused as you could be with me? And we all know the answer, right? If you're in a webinar, everybody knows you turn off your notification, you put your phone away, you take your watch off, you put your camera on, you take out a notebook, you're ready to go, right? Like that's what I need to do. Do I do that in webinars? Yes, every time. No, that is a lie. And if somebody says at the beginning of a webinar, you know, think about what you need to do, this is what we're learning today, honor yourself. You don't get a lot of time for learning. Right? Just take a break from the emails. I promise you, in 20 minutes, I'll give you a 5-minute break to look at it. I understand you have kids, you have schools to run. That's more important than what you're doing here. But like as much as you can, really try to focus here. And I think that having those conversations with students and explaining to them, we're really going to focus here. Your notifications are going to be really distracting. This is why I'm asking you to put the phones away. There's a lot of research that having the notifications is problematic. And if you don't feel comfortable putting it over in that space, I understand, but it really can't be out because we really need to focus here. Now you do have a Chromebook And even then, sometimes there's this temptation to go on Minecraft or listen to music. And what are some things that you do to try to like minimize those distractions and just start having those conversations? And then when you see students who do not make the most responsible decisions, if we have great relationships, we can check in and be like, it looks like you're a little bit distracted. Is everything okay? Is there anything we can do to get you back on? And if it keeps happening, certainly we are responsible for student learning. And I might say, you know what, today, let's just switch to another option because it's like, you're not learning today and you're so brilliant. And it pains me to see you distracted. And then we'll try again tomorrow. And I think that we're expecting perfection when this work is about growth. And last night, my husband and I were talking just about like, if we are continually blocking students' availability to technology, and then they go into college and they're on their own, and they don't know how to minimize the distraction on their own, if they don't know how to self-regulate, we're going to be in trouble. And so just like anything, at the beginning of sessions, I often will say, I would love for you to make a to-do list of everything you're overwhelmed about, a professional column and a personal column. You can text somebody, you can write it down, you can have a conversation, but like think about all the things that you have to do that you're super, super overwhelmed with, and let's just get it out on the table. And then think about how many of those things really need to happen right now. And if they need to happen right now, please step out and take care of it. Truly, if it's going to bother you and you won't be able to focus, like this is not me being fresh. This is truly, I want to honor you in the hierarchy of your life. Professional development with Katie Novak is not a foundational layer. And then I also promise every half hour to give you a win block that stands for what I need. And there might be a prize for the person who gets the most things off their list, right? So let's focus on learning and then let's like jam out that to-do list. And I've gotten really good feedback even about that of like, I was so much less distracted than I would have been if we didn't start in that way.
Oh, I love that so much. All right, Katie, I know my listeners have probably been scribbling notes frantically as you've been talking because you're just throwing out such wisdom, but I also want folks to take an actionable step. So, you know, if they're to do something tomorrow or next week to enhance their leadership journey, what would be one thing? And if you want to cheat, you can do more than one, but I know it's hard. But if one thing for them to do to make sure they're the best leader they can possibly be.
I think that the most important thing as leaders is that we really think about why we're doing everything we do. Yeah. That UDL is about firm goals and flexible means. And I feel like sometimes as leaders, we do things on a hamster wheel. We have a faculty meeting because we have a faculty meeting. We have PLCs because we have PLCs. And it's kind of being just, you know, your schedule is your master more than what really is the purpose of our time together. And if we can step back and we can say, what really is the purpose of this time together? And do we all have to be in a room, sitting in chairs, looking in the same direction for us to meet the goal of that time? And sometimes if there is no goal, then that is going to be a problem. Where, you know, on Monday, for example, we end up doing a lot of PD design jam work with me and my colleagues. And, you know, the week before I always kind of check in, this is the goal of our time together. Is there anything that comes up? And nothing really came up. And I said, you know, the point of these PD design jams is really for us to do some things collectively to get some work done. And so it's optional. If you feel like you want to get some work done, then I would love to see you. But honestly, if you feel like it's more important for you, and I think that sometimes we just have to remember the humanity of this work. This is not a factory model anymore. We have to stop treating it like it is one. So we must have a meeting. It must be 1 hour. It must be in this room. Like that's made up. That is literally made up. And if you remember, like what really is the goal here, we might give an option of where teachers are. We might give an option of how they learn. We might give an option of how they work together. And there's something that's so incredibly amazing for culture when you say, for instance, we're learning a new grade book. We adopted a new grade book. And the purpose of our time together in tomorrow's faculty meeting is for you to feel really confident in using the grade book. Some of you are super tech savvy, and the thought of sitting in a room with a presenter taking you through step by step is painful. So there's going to be three options. You can come here, we'll have the presenter, they'll take you through step by step. Some of you just might want to go to a computer lab. The computer tech specialists also knows how to do it. They're there to troubleshoot. You're welcome to stay in your room. The non-negotiable is everybody has to have their grades posted by the end of the week. So really think about what you need. We're here to support you. And people are like, wait, what? We can stay in the room. And I think it just comes down to what really is the goal and is there another way to reach it? And I think when we say to educators, like, we know your time is valuable. It is a bigger problem than money, right? Our lack of time. And I want to respect your time. And this is the purpose of this time together. And this is essentially, these are your options for how you're going to meet that goal. And I think that goes a really, really long way.
Such great advice, Katie. So I want my audience to connect with you as soon as possible. So is there a website or social media that you tend to drive people to get connected as soon as possible?
Our website is novakeducation.com. My last name is Novak, N-O-V-A-K. So Novak Education, we have a ton of blogs. We have some self-directed courses. You know, there's lots of different resources and book club guides for the books that I've written and really focused on how do you universally design a book club. So there's some really good resources there. On social media, I'm on all the things. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter. Usually my name is Katie Novak UDL, but I'm very easy to find. So please reach out. I love to hear from all educators and aspiring leaders. And again, I think a lot of the times our work is like, how do we do this perfectly? There's no such thing. It's like, how am I going to show up tomorrow better than I showed up today? What's something that I can do to make people feel like this work is possible, that they're valued, that they understand their impact? And that means really coming back and saying, what really are our goals? And what are some of the assumptions I've made about maybe there's only one way to reach those goals? And that's like artificial and not authentic. And when we work with teachers, even if I don't know how to do that flexibility, I might say, I need help. What type of flexibility could we offer so that everyone's still working towards this goal? The goal is non-negotiable. But what do you need in terms of support, in terms of pathways, in order to be able to show up as your best teacher self?
Yeah, definitely head over to novakeducation.com. And then if you head over to my website, joshnapper.com, I'll have all of Katie's social media links there for you. It's literally click and go follow. And then we'll also have books in regards to the many resources that Katie and her co-authors have written. It's a very long list of wonderful, amazing resources that you can find. And yeah, reach out to Katie too if you have any questions or if you want to take that first step. Maybe you've already started UDL in your classroom or on your campus, and you are wanting some additional support to get this kicked off even in a better way. Katie is an amazing resource for you. So please head over to her website, buy her books, connect with her. I guarantee that you're going to be a better educator for it. With that, Katie, thank you so much for not only what you're doing in education with this work, which is so important, but also just your time today on Aspire to Lead.
Thank you so much for having me. Anytime.